All right, let's see if there's any questions. Down here in front.
Well, I'm trying to pay attention to my thinking. It can either be very simple, or then it'll go into a full-blown movie. And there must be something in between those two where I can...
There could be. Most likely it is. But paying attention to thinking is not something we usually do. So when you start watching it, it reacts strangely. Sometimes it will be, it's almost like you have to do wax on, wax off. You have to kind of watch it without it knowing that you're watching it, because if it knows, then it starts acting out. But the idea is, the more you watch it, the more it'll settle into what it really is, and the more you'll see it as it actually is. So the watching it, this is going to be over a period of time. And it's like thinking to yourself, how is the mind's thinking a year from now, when you've seen it so much that it's no longer, it doesn't throw you off? See, so you're just watching it, you're seeing fragments of it right now. You're not seeing the fullness of it because you haven't watched it long enough. But as you watch it more and more and more, you'll begin to see exactly how it is.
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious that it's looking, that my mind is always looking for stimulation, learning something new. So that's sort of continuous.
Mm-hmm. You could call that wanting. But after a while, you can notice that there's no wanting in the mind. It's content. It doesn't not want. That mind is moving like that because we don't really pay attention. And so it's like a unruly child that, it's just making up stuff to do. It's sort of like trying to put a child to bed when you know it's bedtime, but they don't want to go. And then they're just all over the place, wild and crazy. But you know, as soon as you get them in the bed, 2 minutes in, they're out. But it's like their energy increases, and they have to do this and they have to do that. And so that this kind of process, you are just cultivating a relationship. And as you cultivate that relationship, then you'll know, it's almost like you know how to let some things go and pick some things up. You gradually begin to know the mind with more, more of its complexity. Right down in front. Oh, okay.
Okay, so that reminds me of, so there's Lungta.
There's what?
Lungta, which is I was studying the tradition under Pema Chodron. And it's kind of like a life force, mm-hmm. is how I understand it. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference between that and the wild mind.
That's right.
And now I'm a little confused about what the difference is.
You have to learn this. And it's not something that just comes... You have to actually learn it by investigating it. But there is a ordinary mind that judges, evaluates. It's what I call the external. It's just some imposition on me from the outside world or what I learned from my parents or society that just judges and imposes itself on me. And it's very loud, it's very disrespectful and aggressive. But then there is a voice in me that is softer, quieter, that is actually helping me stay on the path, stay in the practice, trust, settle, and it is quieter, and it actually helps me steady and gain some kind of stability. And learning the difference between those two becomes very important, because one, that inner voice you want to listen to. The outer imposition, you want to just stop feeding that, because it's old thought patterns and old rehearsed sayings. It's all part of the habit world, and it's imposing itself on you, and you live out of it, but it's not coming from the direct experience of now.
Okay. Yeah, that really helps, because I think we can kind of feel it. Yep. We can feel like one really feels like it's pretty solid in our body, mm-hmm. maybe, and the other one feels almost like it's, I mean, this is how I'm imagining yeah. it, I guess, because of the way you described like, it. Yeah. yeah. Like almost like it's an irritation, yep. right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have to learn to distinguish those two.
Okay. Yeah. Great. This is really helpful. Thanks. And by the way, I was really proud of myself because I noticed that statue behind you was like that. And that was part of my thought, though. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm so proud of myself. I noticed that.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I kind of expected during walking to come for worry to come up in planning, because what really surprised me was all of the judging that came up. Mm-hmm. It started out with judging other people, but quickly turned around.
That's right.
But what was kind of great is that I sort of saw how, I mean, to use the funny word empty, how empty it all was.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's empty. It's not you. It's just words. Yeah. No more than a bird doing a bird song is you. It's not you. That chair, it's not you. There's something there, but it's not you. And we know these other sense doors are not us. And yet when it comes to the mind, we think that judgment, that all that external stuff is actually me. And so seeing it as empty, not you, just phenomena happening, rising, passing.
Yeah.
That is what's liberating about working with the third foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
Nice. Yeah, I see your hand, Lauren, just a moment.
I was going to say that for me also, my mind is always seeking stimulation, always, 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 and I have a great fear of boredom. And my therapist said to me, there's no such thing as boredom. And I was like, well, you know, whatever. But in my head, I didn't say anything. I said worse, but in my head. But I thought about it, and I thought, well, in a sense, I think she was right, because for me, it is anxiety that pushes my hamster wheel, you know, going all the time. And I find that I mentioned yesterday that having the noble silence was very helpful for me. And I don't look anybody in the face, because I'm a real, I think I must have very porous boundaries or something, because I see a face and I'm just like all, you know, like communicating visually. Yeah, mm-hmm. drawn in. So I just want to comment too that I noticed that being with other human beings is just naturally stressful. I mean, you talked about yesterday the way we're always competing, and that's our biology.
Yep,
and we cannot leave that behind. That is us. And so it's a challenge to not, you know, just to not, to I guess for me to recognize that I'm driven by anxiety and a lot of this stuff. And if I can get quiet and outside, particularly, I'm less anxious, and then I can access that internal mind.
Yep.
And that's really helpful. So the things you pointed out, really, really very helpful. Thank you.
And that you can learn once you have this established relationship with you, the body, you can learn to not compete. So you can step out of the world of competition because you don't have to be in it. But we won't step out of that world unless we somehow or another recognize who we are.
And I think for me, aging has helped me step out. I'm not fully aging. Retired, but just, you know, it helps a lot.
Oh, it helps a lot. Bless that old age, man. Woo-hoo-hoo. Lauren. I mean, getting older has some drawbacks, but that's not one of them. That is the gift of it. Yeah, Lauren.
Yeah, Tiweri, I was interested in the foreground, background, you know, kind of grounding with a mantra or something that calms the mind and focuses it, and then putting that in the background so that I can have a little distance and observe objectively.
Yeah.
The mind, was that what you were suggesting?
Yeah, you can do it like that, or you can, once you get your anchor established, you need to establish that anchor at the beginning of every sit.
Right.
Establish that anchor. Then you can relax a little bit when you have this anchor that feels established. You just notice that if the mind gets pulled to thinking, that anchor is still going on. It hasn't stopped, even though the mind might be pulled in thinking. So you think of that anchor as being in the background and the thinking is in the foreground. And you can bring that anchor forward anytime.
Okay, so I was doing that. I mean, that was what I set up. And then I remembered you talking about one of the lists that was in the fourth foundation was sense objects, the six senses. Was that right?
Yeah, six sense medias is what it was.
Yes, okay.
Talking.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to try to, you know, be aware of that objectively, you know, not identify with it. And so I was doing hearing, and I was hearing the cars going by with the rain. And I realized how pleasant that sound was to me and how I really liked it. And I had many memories of that sound, that it's comforting. And then I really was attached to it and I felt identified with it. So I thought, how do you not identify with it? Because I thought, well, I'm on my way to creating myself. As soon as I get into that attachment to what's pleasant to me at a very basic level. I mean, that's a very basic attachment.
Yep.
And it seems so innocuous. And I thought, well, how do I not go in that direction and be attached? And I just felt the solidity of myself in that attachment to that sound.
Yep.
And I thought, I guess I stay with it and explore impermanence of it. I guess that might be a way to do it.
You could. You could, but as you know you're getting solidified, you're tumbling into it, right? You need a reset. So you need to come back to your anchor.
Okay.
Settle back just right here, present moment. Find the present moment again, and then open up to it and see if it can just be hearing, hearing, and watch how the mind takes hearing and begins to create the story again, and then you start feeling all attached to it, and then you can begin to see how the mind does that. Because you're not doing it, the mind is doing it.
Okay, but I think I also need to see the happiness, quote, the kind of happiness that the mind gets from just being aware, as opposed to the happiness I get from that comfort of that sound.
That's right. That is very different.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
And so you're practicing with it. Don't worry about getting stumbled into it, because that's really what you want to see. You want to see yourself stumble into it,
right,
and then know you stumbled, back up again, settle down, get yourself back to just the breath, just here, just now.
And investigate both of those.
That's right.
And the attraction of that comfort.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. Yeah.
I actually have a question about dukkha.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had... I'm having actually challenges in the level of things that we call dukkha. I think yesterday, so the Buddha, when he talked about dukkha, your sense is that he was pointing to, you know, the mental torment that we go through when we want to cling to something.
Yeah, when we don't like something or we want something else.
Right. Or either, right. And I've heard that idea of dukkha. I don't know if it's, you know, double dukkha.
Yeah.
Is that something that was already actually said by the Buddha or
dukkha? It's
practitioners start
saying
that.
Dukkha is the dukkha in the four noble truths is dukkha. Even though we just say there's dukkha, it's really the dukkha part. Dukkha in general would be just the dissatisfaction with life that happens because we can't get what we want, and we have to get things and deal with things that we don't want. And just the whole of that causes a degree of dukkha that comes with life. Dukkha, the dukkha that he was talking about, is the dukkha of this overlay where we actually mistakenly believe that we can stop that from happening, that we could create a life where we don't have that initial dukkha, that we wouldn't have any more pain. We can figure out a way to make everything smooth. And that dukkha is the distortion that the mind convinces us that we can do that. And so what you liberate is that second dukkha and come back into the natural world of dukkha and difficulty. And it's part of life. And when we can accept that this is all part of life, then we can learn to have, it's how the mind can be both joyous and sad at the same time. You can have some great difficulty and still have a lot of joy at the same time. And we don't, our ordinary minds will not allow that to happen. It'll make us either be sad or happy, but we can't be both. And the body mind, this chitta, heart mind, it can be happy and sad at the same time. It doesn't have any conflict with that. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
So I was working today with, like that foreground background, and this last walking meditation, I feel like I was in like a state of open awareness, and I could kind of like in that state see the thinking and then the judging of the thinking, like almost visualize, like seeing them, like they're just like pulling at each other almost while I was walking. But when I'm not in a state of open awareness and I'm like working with that foreground background, it feels like much more challenging to shift back to my anchor. Like I feel like it almost feels like, I think it's that judging, but it feels like very abrupt. Like I'm like, okay, back to the anchor. And I can feel that judgment a bit in there, but it's like how to like soften that transition. And sometimes I'll ask myself, or I'll ask like the thinking mind, I'm like, or I'll tell it, I'll be like, hey, we'll come back to you later. And it believes me every time, because it's like, yeah, we'll be back.
we'll remind you that we're waiting in the corner.
Yeah. But yeah, I was wondering if you had some advice on like how to soften that transition back to the anchor, because sometimes it does feel so abrupt.
It's two ways that I softened it. One is I always say thank you. I always tell the mind when it's like saying some profound garbage, I'll say, thank you, thank you. Even when it's in a panic attack, thank you, okay, thank you. And I've learned to talk to it like a child and not fight with it like an adult, because I think that mind is much more of a child than it is an adult. So I talk to it like I would a child, with this kind of, okay, but settle down, it's okay. And then have a sense of calming it all the time. And then two, like I said, where we have the mind up here and all the other sense doors, what we've been cultivating over the last 2 days is just a way to bring the other sense doors up. So I always say to myself when I get caught in these mental torments, I was like, okay, thank you. Let's see what the ears have to say and the eyes have to say about this moment. See what the mouth says. Let's see what the body says. Because all these other sense doors are experiencing the exact same moment differently. What the ears may be hearing is just silence. Your mind may be going on and on and on, but the ears aren't hearing anything. They're just in resting mode, waiting for a sound. The eyes may just be seeing the shapes and colors of things, and they actually might be really enjoying the outdoors or the shapes of things or just the being in the hall. They're very happy. But the mind overshadows all of our other sensory experiences. The body may be feeling very pleasant, very relaxed. Nothing's going on, no pain, very nice. And we don't know any of that because our ordinary mind will shut out all of that and get obsessed with its own self. So this kind of thanking that mind, the thinking mind, thanking it, and then let's see what the other sense doors are experiencing right now. And that helped me realize that not just because my mind is having a catastrophic event doesn't mean any other sense door is having a catastrophic event. Everybody else is doing good. Everybody else is happy. Just the mind is freaking out. But everybody else, and it doesn't take too long before you start realizing you don't want to reference everything, every moment out of the mind's catastrophic obsessing. And you really want to just listen to what the ears are hearing, which is usually not a lot. It doesn't hear a lot. Bodies don't feel pain a lot. Some bodies have pain, but most of us are just like, I have arthritis, but it's not always in pain. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Mostly it's not. But because it does act up in my knees and ankles, I get all freaked out about the knees and ankles. But most of the time, it's not acting out. So that's the way I think you can soften it. It's just this kind of talk to the mind like it's a child. Not a baby, not a, you know, but a child that is, like if a child came in, you're babysitting, and a four-year-old comes in all scared, telling you there's a monster under the bed. You know there's no monster under the bed, but they take it seriously. And the mind takes its catastrophic emergency seriously. But you're like firm that there's no monster. So we're going to go turn the light on. Let me take a look and I'll clear out any monsters that are there. And that child will feel reassured that you will look after it. And so that's really what this mind is freaked out about. And I'll just say one more thing. The reason why it gets so freaked out is because somehow in our lives, just the way we're raised, as human beings, our minds and bodies get separated. And in that separation, we're kind of trapped here because the body knows what's happening and the mind is a little bit off on its own, kind of freaked out. There was a commercial they used to have of, they were commercials. I don't know if you guys remember these commercials. They were commercials about climate change and what we were doing. It was the early kind of, I don't remember the organizations, but the early projection, if we don't deal with this climate change, our kids are going to pay for it. And they would have these kids like operating big machinery, you know, like they'd have to, they'd be out, all the traffic is stopped because you just have all these cars in the middle of the highway, and they have these kids out there trying to figure out what they're supposed to do with these cars and what they're supposed to do. And it was, I think the commercials were to imply that we are ruining the world for our kids, and our kids are going to have to deal with all this mess and they won't know what to do. And so ever since I saw that, it created in me an understanding that my mind doesn't understand what's happening. It's still living as if I'm back at home in a crazy house with crazy, angry parents. It still thinks that's what's going on. And so it's all in a tizzy trying to prove to me what to do. But I am living in a very safe world. If my father was alive, he wouldn't talk to me like he did when I was little. I would be just get my stuff and walk out of the house. It just wouldn't happen. So this idea that I'm living in that world as if that world is a reality, that's the difficulty. That's the second dukkha, the dukkha. And we have to find a way to bring ourselves into the present moment and bring this mind into the present moment with it so that the two of them know where we are. So we're judging our lives out of the safety of the present moment and not out of some reactivity from the past. Do you see?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go ahead. Can you let them in, Cheryl?
Just my last thought, trauma. So, the mind is, if you're triggered and you're just feeling, the reality is there's no, it's inappropriate to the situation, but it feels so real. How do you, how do you deal with it?
Bring yourself into the present moment. You got to stop worrying about getting rid of the trauma and bring yourself into the present moment.
Just by bringing your breath or whatever anchor,
grounding,
bringing it forward.
Breath, whatever you can do, corners to rooms, whatever you can do. You can open the door. Cheryl, you can open the door. Let them in. Whatever you can do to bring yourself in the present moment.
Is okay next?
While they're coming in, Cheryl, go ahead.
So as you're talking, I'm thinking there's a part of us that is aware of all of this.
Yep.
And it can kind of like shine the light on different parts of ourselves.
It can.
And it can also make a decision about needing to bring things together, or so what part is that?
It's our inner wisdom, but we have to, this is also Marilyn's question, so I think I'm going to talk about this a little bit wilder, a little bit bigger.
Wilder sounds good, too.
Wilder. I meant wider. I meant wider. But yeah, wilder.